Question number 5. Why are you so passionate about making sure IEEE addresses ethics advice and ethical support for its members? Having experienced being forced to resign in 1974, debating against exempting engineers and industry from being required to hold PE licenses in 1975, and experience in the mobile home fire deaths case convinced me to get involved professionally in IEEE and work to support my fellow engineer members to be supported in practicing ethically. I then contacted Dr. Steve Unger of the CSIT to see how I could contribute to his ethics efforts. That led me to being appointed to a new USAB, which is the United States Activities Board Ethics Task Force, charged with developing a proposal and procedures for IEEE to form a member conduct committee for the first time. The task force met in New York in the spring of 1977 to begin that work. Steve Unger led the group develop procedures for disciplining members who violated the Code of Ethics. I then led the same group to develop procedures for providing ethics advice and ethical support. Then the USAB president, John Guerrera, who had been a prior IEEE president, asked me to go to San Diego and present its proposal for creating a member conduct committee. I did that, and also Jim Ferriman presented one proposal of the board for just disciplining members. These were then combined, and at the February 1978 meeting, the board created the first member conduct committee and approved each of the three proposed services to be provided: member discipline, ethics advice, and ethical support. Here is an important historical note for members to be aware of. While we got the member conduct committee approved and three services to be provided, the board of directors didn't really want to support ethics advice and ethical support. They only wanted to discipline members, but it was the United States Activities Board representing regions 1 through 6 of the United States on which Steve Unger and I served, wanted to protect the engineer's practice. And so the ethics advice and ethical support got approved in 1978, but only lasted for 20 years. And that's the problem we're facing now. We do not have ethics advice and ethical support being provided to the members. Later, a few months after that, just after the Member Conduct Committee was formed, I filed what may have been the first Member Conduct Committee misconduct complaint against my former engineering director, a Texas professional engineer, and an IEEE senior member. I charged that he conducted himself in a way that was misconduct actions that he took in getting me forced to resign. But the Member Conduct Committee would not accept it as a case. My wife had been urging me to, quote, just let it go, unquote. And with the MCC not accepting it as a case, I did just that. There's an important governance policy that needs to be stressed. When the Ethics Committee came into being in the 90s, one of the things it got accomplished was the requirement by the membership committee of IEEE to require members to agree to abide by the Code of Ethics when they either join or rejoin. That was a mandatory requirement. And since 1974, in the Code of Ethics, Canon 10, it states that the members, which collectively comprises the Institute with a board of directors, shall provide ethical support to its members when they are trying to conform to the Code of Ethics and they run into a conflict in their employment situation. I've written about this, and I believe in my view of it, it constitutes a contract agreement between the members on the one hand that join and agree to abide by the code of ethics. And the Institute, on the other hand, it agrees that it will provide support to those members in trying to abide by the code of ethics. And this comes up when they run into a conflict like the cases that I've been discussing before, with BART and so forth. After the Member Conduct Committee got established as early as 1978, there was the Virginia Egerton case. And then in 1998, there was the Salvador Castro case. Those were formal cases brought into IEEE and eventually handed over to the Member Conduct Committee and were supported. After I was appointed to the Member Conduct Committee in 1996 for what I believed was a five-year term, I actually was involved with providing ethics advice to members that contacted the committee and asked for clarification of the code of ethics in different situations. It didn't lead to a request for support, but they wanted to get a better understanding of the significance of the code in different situations. So that was informal ethics advice that was provided. But I was at the meeting, and I handled the liaison between the Member Conduct Committee and the Ethics Committee. And from Steve Unger's Ethics Committee, I brought in to the Member Conduct Committee in San Francisco what became the Salvador Castro case. Now I'm going to discuss a very, very important governance issue. At one of the meetings of the Member Conduct Committee I was serving on, where the chair was Dr. Martha Sloan, the past IEEE president, by the way, one of our members, name was Wally Reed. He was a recent past president of IEEE by about 1 or 2 years. And he formerly had served in a high-level management position with various power industries. In other words, he was a business member. At the time of the meeting, he was serving on a Canadian regulatory body over all of the power industries in Canada. Well, at that meeting, he raised his hand, got permission, and he said the following, quote, "I do not believe that IEEE should get involved in employee-employer conflicts," unquote. There was total silence when he said that, and no one brought up any questions, and there was no discussion. We went on to the rest of the meeting. But today, if you go to the EMCC Ops Manual, item 1.4, is quoted from the bylaw 305.5. And right under that quote, it's in brackets, but under that quote, out of the brackets, is the sentence, the statement that Wally Reed had said at our meeting. Now, once again, I'll repeat it. The IEEE shall not get involved in employee-employer conflicts. Well, that's the whole essence of why we developed 40 years ago, ethics advice and ethical support procedures. Of course, at that time, the board did not want that, but USAB, representing regions 1 through 6, did, and we got it approved. Now, today, that statement of Wally Reed, I'm going to say it just as I believe it, has no bearing whatsoever. It has no standing. It's the only place it exists is in the ops manual on the outside of what was quoted from bylaw 305.5. And the ops manual is at the bottom of the governance chain of command. You have the Constitution, you have bylaws, you have policies, procedures, and then the ops manual. So it cannot override anything above it. And we've got Bylaw 110, Part 10, covers ethical support. Policy 7.11 gives the policies and procedures for carrying out ethical support. Those still exist. They have for the last 42 years. And that one sentence stuck way down at the bottom, governance change, cannot have any effect to nullify those. Now, why that's not recognized, I don't know, but I'm bringing it out. That's a governance compliance matter, and it should be straightened out soon. Thank you. I have brought this to the attention of the governance committee, which must approve anything that is a change in an IEEE ethics practice or policy before it goes to the board. And they are working on that right now for something for the coming June meeting. I don't have the details of what they will be, but I've given them this advice about the contract agreement and the nullification of Wally Reed's statement, which is still in the ops manual. Thank you.